Here we go again.
Natalya looking to step through. Sharpshooter again. Sharpshooter again. What's Paige going to do?
So at Hell in a Cell, the demon will have his day. When he goes one-on-one against Seth Rollins for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship.
Will you marry me?
I say yes.
We're getting married!
Well, as usual, we start off with some of the highlights of Raw.
Were they high?
I'm your host, Alexander K. Lee, joined by your favorite and my favorite, Dario Pop Passarelli.
How's it going, Alex?
I'm good. I'm good, Dario. Actually, I'm in a good mood. We had a nice broadcast last night. You know, things are going well.
You did awesome, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. And, you know, the whole crew has just made everything so easy, so it was a good time.
But it is looking a little ugly today, don't you think?
Why do you say that, Dario?
Well, isn't it uglier when you're missing the most beautiful man in sports podcast history?
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have mentioned it. Obviously, the most beautiful man in the professional podcast world, professional wrestling podcast world. I haven't said that right in like 3 weeks.
Because he hasn't been here.
Yeah. Well, he's on assignment, you know, with the digital side of the class. So I'm sure he's having a good time. But you know, we'll get back to him another time. I'm a little more upset. Not that he's missing our show, but that he missed a show that you two were supposed to go to recently in a little town called Angus.
Little Angus, yes. Big Trouble in Little Angus. It was an independent show, and it was my first time seeing an independent show outside of Smash Wrestling, because right now Smash to me is independent wrestling. It turned out to be quite interesting, actually.
Yeah, I want to apologize to all the listeners. I believe on the last show we had said we were going to get an interview with Casey Spinelli and possibly Jennifer Blake. That fell through. Hopefully another time, either, again, we can see her at a show or get her to call in with the now functioning booth telephone.
Yeah, we got to get that. Try that one time.
But other than that, how was the show, Dario?
The show itself, like I said, was overall was good. There was a number of matches. I'm not going to go through all of them. One thing I did find that the overall texture of the show was different than what I've come to expect from something like Smash Wrestling. And I think that had to do with the crowd that was there. It did seem to be a lot younger in age. I saw a lot more kids than are there. So if you want to use an analogy, it almost seemed a bit more like 80s cartoonish wrestling. There was a lot more posturing. There was a definite, you know, who was heel and who was not heel feel to it until that final match, which I'll get into a little later on. But overall, there wasn't as much as the wrestling portion of it that I saw. They started off the match with the women's tag team. That was Casey Spinelli and Courtney Rush, who we're all very familiar with, against two other females who we're very familiar with, Allison Kay and Jennifer Blake.
Oh, yeah.
Personally, I thought they put on one of the better matches of the night, probably the second or third best one. The other match that I want to bring up was one of the highlights of the night for me. It was a match between, I'm trying to remember his name now, yes, the heel RJ City versus Cody Deaner. And the reason why I bring this up is it was a 10-year-old's birthday in the crowd, and RJ City made mention of that. And then, you know, a typical thing, you know, what's your name, and takes away the microphone. How old are you? Takes away the microphone away from him. He was just being a meanie. And then throughout the match, they spilled out to the ring, and Cody Deaner grabs him by the head, by the hair, and is about to slam him in the mat. Instead, he grabs the microphone, starts singing happy birthday to you, smash, smash, happy birthday to you, smash, smash. I thought that was pretty good. The boy got the fun out of that, seeing RJ City getting his head smashed.
What a thrill for that child.
I thought that was a great moment.
And what a life lesson of how to solve your problems.
Exactly, exactly. The final match was, or say the main event, current champion Scotty the Body versus Crazy Steve, who you might be familiar with. He's on TNA. And a phenomenal match. I was actually very impressed. Very physical. A lot of psychology in there. Tough match to gauge because both of them hail from Angus. So, you know, this is their hometown going at it. So there was it was a very mixed crowd, some going for Crazy Steve, some going for Scotty the Body. Spilled to the outside. There was a senton bomb done outside on the floor. Like, I mean, like it was ouchy. Like, I had to cringe a few times during that match. And Scotty the Body did retain holding his belt, but everybody walked away happy from that, both the wrestlers for coming back home and for the crowd itself, which was packed. Actually, there was no tickets left at the door, so very happy to get my ticket ahead of time.
You know, in one of those situations where both guys are from the same town, they should really do, you know, the thing like, now hailing from blah blah, like some city that Angus hates or something, from Etobicoke, and it's like Angus like, oh no, boo.
Well, like I said, it was difficult because I think Crazy Steve tried it, was about to do a heel move, but then thought better of it, like as if no, I'm above this kind of repertoire. So, like I said, they put on a very entertaining match and very physical compared to the ones previously that were on there.
We should mention Cody Jr., also a former good old Canadian boy and a former TNA performer. And I believe he's a former Knockouts champion or Knockouts tag team champion. I don't want to get into that. Nothing against him. I did not enjoy the angles he happened to be booked in during his time in TNA. But, you know, to each their own.
I definitely will be going out to one of these small town shows again. Like I said, I had a lot of fun. But I have to end this on the absolute highlight of the night. And that was my introduction to one of my new favorite wrestlers. And I have to do this properly, so excuse me while I prepare myself. The name of this wrestler is The Professional, Jackson Jarvis.
Oh, yes.
And I hope I said that right, because, you know, I want to do right by him, because he is so professional in everything he does that he deserves the best introduction. And get this, I love this, he hails from the mountaintops of masculinity. How did I do there?
That was excellent.
Professional?
I haven't had it. Well, nothing you do is professional, but I haven't had a chance to see the real thing yet. But, I mean, if it's half as good as that, then I'm blown away already.
Well, and just to say, he's got the persona sort of like, again, to give you an image, the vaudevillians from NXT. Sort of has that kind of body physique and persona and a great heel. Like I said, and he's professional in everything he does. Absolutely professional. Jackson Jarvis.
So that's Pop's pick of the week, because I had not heard of Jackson Jarvis before you brought it up, and you were gushing about it the next day and on Twitter. So for anyone out there, if you see Jackson Jarvis in your town, hey, get a ticket. Check this guy out. This guy could be a big star in the independent scene, and who knows where else after that.
And again, like I said, with the match, it was like $10 a ticket. So, like, you know, where are you going to go wrong with paying a price like that for such great entertainment?
Yeah, we always say it. Support indie wrestling. You know, a lot of our classmates are talking about how they used to watch wrestling or they don't understand the appeal of wrestling. And I tell them, guys, go to one live show and just try it out. It is totally different from what from what you think it is. And it's just so entertaining. Like, again, you know, like I keep telling people, I was a bit of a lapsed fan there. Like, as far as I would almost tune into Raw like a robot, but not really care about
sort
wrestling
of like anymore. What you're doing to Raw now.
Which is why it's a good thing we go to the occasional Smash wrestling show, that we have shows like NXT, which we'll talk about later, that there are so many wrestling options to watch. I mean, it's a good thing we live in that world now, because if it was just the Raws that we get, again, I'm not quite ready to talk about Raw yet, Pop. I gotta
we'll stretch it out a little bit
lather
longer.
I gotta lather up, as they say in the business, right? That's a radio business term, right?
Yeah, okay, as long as you don't mean it sexually. Well, you don't, because Connor's not here.
Madison Square Garden was the home to the WWE this Saturday. It's essentially a house show, but because of the network now, they can broadcast these things. Because they always do house shows in Madison Square Garden. They just don't host Raws or pay-per-views anymore because it's... I'm not sure why. Oh, I know for pay-per-views, they like to obviously... Like for WrestleMania, obviously, they like to fill at stadiums now. You know, Madison Square Garden is an amazing venue, but it's still, I think, a max like 20,000 people, under 20,000.
Correct. It's an arena.
It's more for Raw house shows, which is fine.
But they still have other things other than WrestleMania. I think they had a couple of pay-per-view shows. Maybe that was a few years ago.
I think you're definitely right. No, they absolutely did. So this was essentially a house show, but they put on the network, so there's a few more bells and whistles. And it's essentially in the same vein as the Beast from the East show from a few months back. You know, they're experimenting with putting some of these... I don't know what to call them, like prestige house shows on the network. Obviously, they're not going to do it with every house show, though someday that would be amazing if they did. It was a good card. It was a good card. It was essentially a Raw without talking, you know, which is a good thing.
No, actually, I'll take it differently, because there was a bit of talking, not a lot. There was a bit. You know what it was?
What was it?
It was a three-hour Raw put into 2 hours.
Yeah, it really gave the performers a chance to shine. Now, I'm not saying, look, I'm not saying, like, the Neville-Stardust match was any different than a match they've had on Raw, so that's whatever. The opening tag match, sure, that's something you could see on Raw. But when you, like we said, when you take out some of the fat and you kind of just get to see these things in a row, maybe for some people it would be exhausting. For me, it was refreshing. Maybe I wouldn't want to see it all the time. But as we keep saying, maybe it'd be nice for Raw to not start off with a promo for the first time in over a year.
It could be. You know, we've had many discussions in terms of Raw, in terms of what we don't like. You know, and I look at this opportunity here and go, you know, what are they trying to do with these? Why did this show get so much airtime on Raw? Why were they promoting this on Raw? Why were they promoting the Beast from the East on Raw? And it's like, again, you know, everything in wrestling has a purpose. They, you know, we might not understand what it is. It might not make any sense at all. But everything there should have a purpose, and
should.
It should be moved.
I want
should.
The emphasis to be on should.
Should. And why do they keep promoting something like this on Raw? And I think it goes down to the bottom line is that the only way to see it is if you spend $9.99 on the WWE Network, or $11.99 or $12.99 in Canada, whatever province you're in. So again, it's one thing to draw it more in, and that's all it is in my eyes.
Yeah, and in this case, I'll say it might have convinced some people. I think if anyone was, you know, at a friend's place or something and watching, and they might be like, man, the Raw's, like, not Raw, I'm sorry, but WWE is pretty good sometimes when you cut out the filler. You know, maybe I should look into this. This network that people are talking about. And so in some ways it was effective. I thought we mentioned the Owens Jericho match was probably the highlight of the undercard.
Of the undercard, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Really good chemistry between them. And I was telling you before, I didn't think it hit a next level, but it didn't really need to, especially if they're going to build up to another matchup in the future. It's good that they left something on the table. But otherwise, it was pretty obvious they had good chemistry. Their styles meshed really well. Jericho sold great for Owens' offense, and I like the ending a lot too.
It was, now I can't remember. We haven't praised Owens a lot lately. We had when he's first started coming out,
yeah,
and we almost praise him, you know, almost every week. But he does the little things that just make me like him more. Mm-hmm. And right now, I can't remember if it was the match at Madison Square Gardens or if it was on Raw, but it was a very simple interaction with the referee. I think this was on Raw. I think this was on Raw because it was facing Lucha Dragon. Sorry to bring up Raw, but this was a great moment. And if you didn't pay attention, you would have missed it. He goes to quickly pin the Lucha Dragon, and the ref goes, one, and he kicks out. And Kevin Owens turns to the referee and goes, that was three. And the referee turns to him and goes, no, that was one. And then 2 seconds later, he pins him again. And the same thing happens. And Kevin Owens still turns to the referee and goes, that was three. And the ref goes, no, that was one. Not even a two count there. We didn't even get the two. Just little things like that just crack me up about Kevin Owens.
Yeah, and you know, it's those sort of things that you really can't teach. Only experience can teach you. And that's why we see things like, you know, we worry about some of these guys that get brought up just through WWE, like just even through something as spectacular as NXT. Are they learning these little things? Who teaches these little things? I mean, from what we've seen, they do a pretty good job. But Owens obviously came in as a very polished product right away. And again, unless you've been through, you know, the trenches like he has and been through so many different crowds and venues and, you know, types of matches and opponents, it's really hard to teach, you know.
It is, and the one thing that worries me about Kevin, and this is something that I look forward to see, because as much as he's been in the business for 15 years, there's still stuff that he needs to learn. And I look at it, and this is what he just did there, or what I just explained, that's a small venue act, because that only gets laughs from those that are in the first couple of rows that hear it, or if it accidentally gets picked up by the camera, in this case accidentally, it's not going to make the people in the nosebleeds in a 20,000 seat stadium take notice or understand or pick up on it. And that's, I think, where he starts needs to go next, is because he's been on the independent scene, because he's played to like 200, 300 people at a time and got that small, comfy venue. There's something that you do in that kind of venue, just like putting on a concert, you know. Is it a small bar concert, or are you doing a full-fledged stadium? And how do you reach those people in the upper seats? So I think that's the next stage of his development, is how does he reach those next people that are higher up there and that don't catch his little witticisms that he does so phenomenally well?
So, as we said, that was one of the highlights. Obviously, Owen's work, Jericho, another guy, really, who's watched a similar path and you know, wrestled everywhere. That's why they meshed so well. Hopefully, we'll get to see them wrestle again. The opening match was good, I thought. Randy Orton, Dolph Ziggler, Sheamus, Rusev. Was sort of a weird moment at the end where Rusev was kind of punking Sheamus, and Sheamus, you know, gave him a bro kick. I thought that was okay. The crowd was kind of like not into it, and why should they be? It was very confusing.
I didn't get it up, and they didn't follow up with it on Raw. So, like, again, what was the benefit of it?
I'm not sure. And then Neville and Stardust, I mentioned. I like both these guys. It's just we've seen the match. It feels like we've seen the match like a million times now. But again, this is what they do at house shows normally, so it, you know, I guess you can't criticize that too much. Dudley Boyz and New Day, I thought was great. The opening trash talk by New Day was unreal.
They are again setting themselves apart.
When Kofi made fun of Bubba always pushing Devon to get the tables and stuff, and then Biggie, the look on Biggie's face of just like what is that? Why did you do that? What is that? Like,
did you slap him on the chest?
You're stupid. And then them making fun of the WhatsApp thing, which is kind of scary. Pop, you and I assume we both remember the Budweiser WhatsApp commercials.
Definitely.
I'm actually wondering if Connor was here, if he remembers those. That was during the Attitude Era, though. So actually, he probably definitely does. He loves the Attitude Era. So it's pretty crazy that those commercials lasted maybe, and I'm probably being generous here, like 2 years. Probably even less than that, right? They can't have lasted 2 years.
No.
Their fame,
I would
their
say about
fame,
two.
Like 2 years. Yeah. The notoriety and the fame. Last maybe 2 years. Dudley Boyz have been doing the was up headbutt for like a decade now. how crazy is that?
I mean, I think it's to the point right now where you can no longer call it the Budweiser what up, and you have to call it the Dudley Boyz what up, because it's theirs.
Not into the mics.
But I think New Day is right. And I would love to see the Dudleys come up with something new, except I don't know what.
I was just about to ask you, what commercial? I'm trying to think what viral sort of commercials come out lately, and like I can't think of anything, and that's probably a good thing, because it would probably be something super annoying.
But we should try and take this as homework maybe for next week, because I don't want to do a WWE uncreative and come up with something in 30 seconds like Team PCB,
sure.
Which now they have to come up with another new name for it.
That's probably why they haven't fully broken them up yet, because they're just like, no, we need to keep them together. We don't have anything yet. Yeah, I think it is true to make fun. But it's, you know, this I will say, though, this is a perfect example. I'm always trying to explain to people what I mean when I say good artists copy, great artists steal. And generally what I'm trying to say is, you know, good artists copy means, you know, people can get by sort of doing someone else's shtick, but it'll always be someone else's shtick. Great artists steal is when you take someone else's thing and you make it yours. So I guess I'm saying the Dudley Boyz are great artists for taking the what's up. They own it. It is theirs. Like you said, it is theirs now.
Well, and they obviously share it with the WWE Universe, and WWE Universe is eating it up. So all the more power to them.
What's up? And I don't know anything about the trombone, but like Xavier Woods' trombone playing is just on point. I don't know how to play it. I don't know anything about it. Like I was trying to watch him, like, and I'm like, man, he just
like,
really.
Does he or doesn't he? We're still not sure.
I mean, he definitely knows how to play. There's no question.
Yeah, but he did one tune without actually sliding the trombone.
That's
part,
what I saw. So how does that work? I don't understand.
So he just carries the tune, right?
Oh, is that how? I see. I don't know anything about brass instruments or.
He knows how to blow.
Okay. But yeah, and I love the heat that they get from the crowd. The crowd is, there's like a weird like angry buzz. Like they're ready to just like riot at any moment and just leap out of their seats and, you know, hopefully not like fans have been doing recently, but like just beat up.
And I you know, we criticize Raw a lot, and I keep coming back to it. There are certain parts of Raw that are good. And the unfortunate thing is that it's not because it's Raw that it's good. It's because it's Kevin Owens. It's because it's the New Day. And the New Day segment, one of the New Day segments on Raw, which is really happy to see is too, was when Stephanie McMahon was in, well, not interviewing them, but they came to ask Stephanie McMahon a question, and she's talking to Big E, not very happy about their antics in terms of what they did to the Dudley Boys at Madison Square Gardens. And you see Xavier Woods getting ready to play his trombone, and he's so excited. And Stephanie, because Stephanie's facing completely the other way, without missing a beat, doesn't turn her head around and look at Xavier. She's still facing Big E, just lifts her finger up and says, "And there better not be a single note from that trombone coming up." And then you see him like lowering it slowly. It was again, another great moment from New Day.
Yeah, they're incredible. I'm so glad those three guys have found their niche, especially obviously Kofi, who's been, you know, even though he's been featured in prominent angles before, you never felt like he was ever really in his own skin. He's always seemed to be, and I know he's doing a character now, obviously, but he just seems so comfortable and so happy. And he's getting to do both. He's getting to both wrestle great matches and show off personality, which, and definitely never had that combination before. So
all three of them. I mean, a Big E with his, can I say the word? Gyrations?
I was going to say, there's one thing Stephanie McMahon and the Authority and WWE corporate should be mad about. It's their dance moves, because it's making me feel some kind of way, and I know I'm not the only one, and I don't think children should be allowed to watch what's happening with these dances sometimes. Goodness gracious.
Big E's gyrations, Xavier's trombone playing. Yeah, no, it's it definitely takes it to another level. And, you know, I hope it's not a flash in the pan, but what they hinted at the end of Raw was that this is truly a New Day.
We'll get to that later.
Do we have to?
No. As I was saying before about how I like the heat that New Day generates, and that it sounds like the, it seems like there's genuine violence in the air. Again, I don't mean to joke about, you know, the recent rash of people jumping to the ring doing stupid stuff. Oh, by the way, Kofi had a great moment where like he was like raising his hand, like cheering, and some fan kind of reaches out, for a second, trying to like reach out, like, "Oh, high five." He's like, "Don't touch me, bro." And I'm like, "That is, I love that." So, but I was saying, so during the main event with Cena and Seth Rollins, you know, JBL and Saxton are having this exchange, and they're like, and JBL's like, "Look, if you don't like John Cena, do something about it." And I'm like, like he was saying, like, fans are sick. I think Byron was saying, like, fans might be, oh, how he's polarizing. John Cena's right. Polarizing. Some fans like him, some don't. And JBL's like, "Well, some people don't like it. They should do something about it." I'm like, that's probably not the best phrasing, considering the reasons.
How many people have walked into the ring?
"JBL told me I could do it." "He told me, the man on the TV told me to do it."
JBL is a little excited.
Yeah.
He's got his own new show now.
He does.
Which was really good, by the way.
And I'll say, I feel like he's gotten back to being, I mean, he used to be one of the best commentators. Then he got really annoying. I think he's back balancing it somewhat. He's not like as annoying as he was for a stretch there. Maybe beating up on Byron Saxton's bringing out the best in him. I don't know. But he seems okay now.
I think I look at it for announcers like himself, like Jerry Lawler. There was a stretch there where, hey, face it, even announcers, you have your faces and your heels as announcers. And Jerry Lawler and JBL play the heel announcer. That's their job. But there's a stretch there for each of them where it seems forced. And I think, like you're mentioning right now, with back to JBL and what happened with Jerry Lawler, is they came back a notch, and it wasn't forced. It was, hey, you know what? Yeah, I can cheer for the New Day because they're good and they entertain. But with some of the other ones, it almost seems like they're making these comments just to help that heel, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, and so I was thinking, as I was saying, I think they found the right balance. Hopefully, I could be wrong. Maybe I just haven't listened deeply to JBL in a while. But yeah, I thought he did all right. The co-main event and really the most hyped match on the show, Brock Lesnar and Big Show. It was for me, again, Brock Lesnar just remains, and I think anyone will agree, the most unique act in wrestling today. I mean, there's just nobody who can get away with wrestling his match style. So for me, I thought the beginning was really exciting, just the bull rush on Big Show, and he just couldn't bring him down. And it was cool because he tried to wrestle the exact same style he wrestles with everybody else, but, you know, he had a slightly differently sized target, I think it's fair to say.
I looked at it and went, this was not going to be a Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, 60-minute man marathon. And it wasn't, and I thought it was a smash-in-your-face kind of match. It didn't seem long at all. It seemed like really quick. But it was just like pound, 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 pound. And then at the end of it, I looked and went, wait a second. That's exactly what I would have expected in real life with two guys this size going at it. Like, they were going to win and win soon. They weren't going to use any, you know, mental strategies and work on a limb or work on... They were just going to pound each other, and whoever was left standing was the winner.
Yeah, the concept of the match was fine. The execution was... it was interesting.
What? 2 points. One, Brock not selling one chokeslam.
You can get away with that. It's like, he's like, oh, the dude's Diesel. It's like, look, he took, because he kind of did sell it in a way. He like kind of shot up like, oh, I'm in a lot of pain, but I'm okay. Like, I'm stuck with the adrenaline pumping. I'm going to go at him.
But then there was a second.
Yeah.
Was there a third?
There was a third.
He did have wobbly legs.
And he stayed down for the third one. He stayed down, got pinned, and then kicked out at two. But it looked like, oh, wow, he's really hurt. And then the pain miraculously, I think he felt the Holy Ghost or something, because the pain seemed to just escape his body.
It was the power of Paul Heyman.
By the way, the irony in that is they're trying to show, you know, the opening montage. They're like, oh, 2002, Big Show beat him. And like, they show like Paul Heyman shocked at ringside. Like, oh, and I'm like, they're just going to gloss over the fact that Paul Heyman screwed him. And like, I don't even remember that match. Paul Heyman screwed Brock, and that's how Big Show won. And I'm like, you know what? It's done for. It was 13 years ago. Let's not.
We don't need to go
we
there.
We don't need to go there. No need to bring it up. As impressive as it was, I got to admit, I found that the whole thing a little bit grotesque, though. I can't stop thinking about, and this is a stupid thing to talk about when you're talking about a love of professional wrestling, but I couldn't stop thinking about just the abuse that Big Show was putting on his body. The healthy years that he was taking off his life, you know? And then, of course, thinking about all the people who have been asking him to retire lately, and I'm just like, you people are so ungrateful and disgusting.
I think there's a few spots there. Number one, I don't think it was that bad of an abuse to his body. It's not like this happens every night. It's one of the few times that Big Show has ever gone, quote unquote, manhandled. I'm acceptable of the botch, because it shouldn't be easy to lift a 450 to 500 pound match.
No problem.
Man,
at all.
You know what? Hey, they went back at it and says, you know what? I'm doing it again. It wasn't originally planned, but I thought they kind of worked their way out of it all right. But I have to agree with you. You know, the Big Show retire chance? Absolutely asinine. And they go along with, you know, chanting "We are awesome" and doing the wave. Absolutely asinine. And there's no place for that, especially when these people look, not everybody's going to be a great performer. There's not every match is going to be a great match, and I don't mind people voicing their displeasure, but that's not displeasure, that's ridicule in my eyes, and I feel there's no place for that.
And I don't even know what it's based on. Like, if you don't enjoy watching the Big Show, like I said, that's fine. Then, you know, suffer in silence. Boo, if you must. I don't know. Heckle his character.
You suck.
You suck. Asking a man to retire who has given so much to this business and, like, as far as I know, just never said no to anything. He's essentially, you know, very much like Kane in his career. And I don't hear people calling for Kane to retire, though actually after this recent angle, maybe they will. And I just, again, we've mentioned this before. I'm not going to go over it too much, but people just stop and leave Big Show alone. Like, if you don't like him, I understand. Like, there are many times, many, many, many Big Show matches and segments that I have not enjoyed. Believe me.
Oh, there's a number of them.
There's a long list.
And there's rumors, and I'm not sure if these are true or not. This goes back a number of years. This is even back in his WCW days, where it was felt that Big Show never took his own game to the next level. That he could have been even better. It just, he never really had the kind of attitude that somebody like a Stone Cold or a Rock had about the business. And if he did have that with his size and what he can do, he would have been a lot, quote unquote, bigger than what he is now.
Yeah, I could see that. For me, it's always been the Andre factor. It's always been guys like him were not meant to be on TV two or three times a week. He's supposed to be a special attraction. I wish the Big Show had almost been treated like a Brock Lesnar back in his career. I'm not saying he has that same sort of inherent charisma that Brock has. You know, you can't teach that. But imagine if he didn't have to get trotted out every week for like a tag match or a random, you know, a random singles match. Or it's just, you get tired of it, right? I mean, back in the day, God bless Andre. I mean, Andre obviously is, you know, he's an all-timer. But I think if people had seen him as much. If people had seen Hulk Hogan as much as they seen John Cena. If people had seen any of these guys as much as we've seen, you know, some of the recent wrestlers on TV, we'd take them all for granted, and we, you know, they lose how special they are.
And I hope they go more towards a Brock Lesnar. I hope, and I think the only way they're going to come about this is if wrestlers start being a bit pushy, sorry Vince, and start saying, you know what, I'm not going to do 320 appearances in a year. I'm only going to do 150.
And look how well it's worked out for Brock, right? Like, and how well it could work out for Randy Orton. When I heard the recent rumors that Randy said he wants to move to more of a part-time schedule, I'm not the biggest Randy Orton fan, but I'm thinking only because I've seen him so many times. Like, ever since, because you got to remember, he debuted with the WWE when he was like 20 or 21, 22, something like that. So young. So we've seen him for, it feels like he's
forever.
Been on TV for like 30 years. And we've probably seen him wrestle more matches than we've seen any of the guys that we used to watch when we were kids. We've probably seen way more Randy Orton matches than Macho Man Randy Savage matches, Hulk Hogan, I don't know, Honky Tonk Man, I don't know why I teased the next name that came up, Ultimate Warrior. So it's very, so for him, like, to be more of a part-time attraction, I think it totally works. I think he's still an amazing wrestler. He got a very good pop at the opening of the show, probably because the crowd was, I mean, you know, the opening match is always going to have some good heat behind it because the crowd's been sitting there waiting for the band to come out, as it were. But yeah, there's definitely still a lot of mileage left on Randy. And if he goes to a part-time schedule, you know, that can only help him. It can only help us. I look forward to it. Let's talk about the main event of the show. It's weird because, again, we have to acknowledge this is a house show. So there's not supposed to be a storyline behind this John Cena Seth Rollins match, right? This is just a match they put on because you're going to a town and you want to have a nice main event.
You see stars.
You see
you're
stars.
Not here to see story or whatever.
You put in two guys who you know can just rip it up. I mean, they've never had a bad match with each other. They certainly didn't have a bad match on Saturday. It was very good. Some would argue it might be the best match they've had. I still think that Raw one was, the one from Raw was spectacular, but this match on Saturday was excellent.
It was good, and I hate saying it again, but the match, as good as a match as it was, it almost seems defeating by the result. Yet again. And like you said, you know, how many, when was the last time Seth won?
It's not just that. It's, that's a lot of that. The thing is, why is the match for the U.S. title and not for the world title? Because then you could have had Seth win the match. You could have had Seth win the match somehow. I mean, clearly, it's only for the U.S. title because they were looking to go out and the show on a Cena victory. Why not? One, why? Like, why does the match need to end? The show need to end on a Cena victory? Two, again, yeah, why the U.S. title and not the WWE title?
When was the last time that the WWE
wrestled?
Title?
Probably the last time they did the Jon Stewart match.
Right, that's a couple of months.
Yeah,
isn't there like a 30-day? Never mind.
Oh,
never
I'm sure.
Mind.
I think he has defended it since then, though. It's not against Cena.
Okay.
I'm saying, when's the last time he defended the world title against Cena? And So let's talk about the match a little bit more before we get into this bigger discussion. It was really good, and again, you know, it's one of those things where some of the spots they hit and some of the escape spots, it was nothing new. You know what I mean? I don't want to say it was anything new, but for me, I'm always an execution over originality person. I shouldn't say that because that's probably what has WWE Creative, you know, spinning their wheels all the time. It's okay. You know, the wrestlers are so good. It doesn't matter what we put them in. But when it comes to Seth Rollins and Cena, that's almost true. They did all the great going for the door spots. They did all the great going over the cage spots. They did stuff that was off the cage.
And the pinning, yep.
Yeah. It built up really slowly. There was no rush. And very nice build up. Very simple. It was, you know, again, it's just like watching a band play like your favorite song and just nailing it. Just like nailing that solo. The drummer's on time. The drummer's got a nice little fill there you hadn't heard before. And I think for me, that's enough. Do I want to see these guys wrestle again over and over again for the next 3 months? Probably not. But if this is sort of the, you know, just the epilogue to the John Cena Seth Rollins feud, yeah.
But it's not, right?
I don't know what it is. Oh, well, one thing it was the continuation of the Kane Seth Rollins feud, which I really hated that ending. I did not enjoy that ending at all. Here's someone pointed this out online. So he's afraid to jump out to Kane. He's like, oh, because Kane might hurt me. Instead, I'm going to do a frog splash into the ring against a guy who's already been beating me up for the last 20 minutes. Because that makes more sense.
Yeah, well, I don't even have anything to say about
it. Was horrible.
Something like that. It,
that was horrible.
Yeah, it is. And I have no idea in terms of where they're going to go with this. And I just want it to go somewhere quickly and move on.
I just want Seth Rollins to feud with someone under the age of 35. I'm not asking for much. Sheamus? Fine, Sheamus. I don't care. Like that's, well, no, I shouldn't say that. Again, I'm saying a lot of things now that I shouldn't say because when they happen, I'm obviously just going to complain about them more.
Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, it just, you wanted something to be relevant. It, like I said, part of what makes a good match is not knowing who's going to win. But when it was for the U.S. belt, we knew. We knew what was going to happen. And when it happens, it's just such a dejected feeling that I get. I mean, I watch wrestling for, like I said before, all the time, the emotional payoff that comes true. I want to be surprised. I want to be, you know, entertained with their physical skills and the results. We were watching the Raw match on Monday. And I'm thinking, there's no chance that they're going to make Paige lose. And then all of a sudden, she taps out to Natalya, and we're looking at each other going, what?
Oh, that was another topic I wanted to bring up if Connor was here with you and Connor, of good surprises versus bad surprises, you know? Because we can't complain all the time about, like, oh, matches are so predictable, and then we get an unpredictable ending, and then we're like, oh, well, that was just stupid. Because we certainly, like, as you just mentioned, we certainly did get an unpredictable ending, and yet I was still left, like, with an unpleasant feeling in my stomach. And not just because I love Paige, okay?
No. It's agreed because...
That wasn't for you. That was for all the listeners out there who, you know, not that anyone...
He's still biased.
Go ahead.
But you look at it and you go, okay, you know, we saw the Paige turning. So if she's turning in terms of a heel...
Did you just say we saw the Paige turning? Incredible.
Incredible. You know what was incredible? I did that without even thinking.
Oh, wow. It's just automatic at this point.
It's just automatic at this point. I know that scares me more. But the truth is we saw Paige becoming heel, and we figure, and I think rightfully so, that if you're going to turn somebody heel, then you need to build them up. If, you know, they need to have something that scares us. They have to be formidable in some way. They have to cheat. But she lost cleanly. Again.
Yeah, that was some mystifying book. I don't even have a problem with it, but couldn't that have been a pay-per-view match? Because the match wasn't bad. I remember I actually watched the match.
It was a decent match. It was a great match from Natalya and Paige.
Yeah, couldn't we have that? I keep saying pay-per-view. Couldn't we have had that payoff on a special event or something? Because I think it's a sort of win where it doesn't do anything for either of them. Because Natalya didn't have to chase that win, you know? She's been back on Raw for 2 weeks, and then she takes out Paige. And it's like, the fans don't care. You know, you're not giving the fans a chance to care, because that was a pretty big win for her, because Paige was running her down pretty bad. And then she just beats her on a random Raw. And it's like, I don't know if this worked. I feel you robbed them of a moment.
No, exactly. And like I said, it's, you know, unless it's part of something bigger, which, oh my God. That's where WWE is coming from.
I don't like where this is going.
I figured them out now. You know, like saying, unless it's part of something bigger, right? Unless it's part of a bigger storyline that we're not aware of. Like, for example, if Paige loses, you know, we said that she's turning. But what if she loses her next 5 or 6 or 7 matches and then completely loses it and becomes a monster?
Like, right? Oh, you mean a psycho?
Like a psycho. So I'm saying, like, it could be part of something bigger. The problem is that we have to wait 4 or 5 or 6 weeks to see this develop, right? And here is where my brain kicks in and goes, that's probably where the WWE catches us, because they think that most of the people that are watching will forget. And by the time 5 or 6 weeks rolls by, they've just automatically changed course and went in a different direction, and it's all for naught, and that's why we get frustrated.
Oh, for sure. It's like following a rebuilding team that's been rebuilding for like 12 years. It's like,
hello, Edmonton Oilers.
It's like every 4 years, the rebuilding plan resets into something new.
Without a championship, like, or without a plus 500 season.
And then, you know, and it's a new regime because the last management got fired. Yeah, they weren't getting it done. Now we're bringing in new management. Now this is the real rebuilding plan. I've seen it in basketball. I've seen
hello,
it in hockey.
Hello, LA Clippers.
I've seen it in baseball. And that is what it's like with the WWE now. They're just sort of always seem to, oh, we're rebuilding the tag division. We're rebuilding the Divas division. Oh, it's rebuilding. It's always, and it's never built. Why is it never built then? Why is it always being rebuilt? How does this, at some point, you've got to stop taking public funds and, you know.
And again, I don't want to.
I don't know where I was going with that.
No, but I understand your point. You know, we've been fawning over the New Day. Right? And we've been accepting of the Dudley Boys coming back. Right? But when they came back, we went, you know what? We're really starting to get a tag team division going now. When was the last time you saw the primetime players?
Oh, they just got jobbed out.
When was the last time, you know, like, where are the other tag teams? We had a great tag team division that was developing.
No,
and now all of a sudden, all we see is
only two teams can look strong at a time. That's how this, obviously, because that's that's how divisions work. You know, it's like when you're watching sports, you only want to see two teams that are good, and you don't care about the 28 or 30 other teams.
Ah,
right?
You are wrong. You are wrong as always. And I know you're just being facetious.
I was being very facetious.
I mean, let's take a look at the TLC matches. We had three teams that were good.
God. Who was it? I don't even remember that.
The Hardys?
The TLC matches.
The TLC matches.
Recent TLC
no,
match.
No,
I'm like,
no,
I don't
no,
remember
no,
any
no,
of
no,
them.
No. But like, I mean, yes. That's, you know, it, but
course.
I'm just saying it's like, we it's not even that they're being jobbed out. They've only had one match in the last 3 weeks that I know of the primetime players.
Yeah, and they got jobbed out to Strowman and
exactly.
Harper.
And, you know, the Lucha Dragons are fighting singles matches. Like what? I'm sorry.
It's frustrating. Or you have the Divas division where nobody looks strong. Where it's just wins and losses being traded. Nobody wins. You know, six-woman tag. This trio wins this week. This trio wins this week.
And that trio has a break.
And then
the trio
has a break.
Around.
And then it's just nonsense. I'm glad, you know, that at least you've been bringing up Raw during the show, so we don't have to do a full rundown of it. So I think that very well done, subliminal Raw coverage.
Thank you.
I don't know what we're going to do with this main event scene, though. So let's talk about Seth Rollins. Let's bring up the broader question I was saying before. What does it even mean to be the world champion these days? Obviously, in the days of, say, Hulk Hogan, you know, it meant you were the biggest money draw, which is logical. The company rewards you with the belt. You know, this is why people say, like, oh, you know, obviously the results are predetermined, so it doesn't mean anything to be the champion. I'm like, no, wrestling is very much a meritocracy. Generally, the person who brings in the most money is the quote unquote champion, and they deserve that, you know, that prestige, right? So that's like any other profession. If anything, that's more, you know, dignified than some professions where the people at top are not necessarily the most qualified and not necessarily the most valuable people to that company. During the Bret Hart era, it was more of a reward for one. I think he was a good draw at the time. I know people say it was a very dark period for the WWE, but he was a draw internationally, things like that.
He was one of the better, if not the best draw at the time.
And he was certainly the best draw at the time. And also, after the Hulk Hogan era, there was, you know, the reward meant something else. It's like he was definitely the best worker. People are like, he was the best guy in the ring. The best guy in the ring deserves the belt. That harkened back to sort of the NWA days with like Ric Flair, who's recognized the best, or Ricky Steamboat. Generally, you had to be one of the three or four best guys in the ring to be a world champion. You know, guys like Hogan came along and shattered that. But, and then the mid-90s, it kind of got fixed again. Then it went back to almost a mixture of that. Then you had guys like Austin and The Rock who were both great wrestlers and clearly far and above as a money-making draw than the rest of the roster. They deserve to hold the title. Then you have transitional champions. You have, you know, other things. But what does it mean now? Why is Seth Rollins the champion?
But I also think it's trying to set, not necessarily set somebody up, but it's also trying to send a message.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Because, look, you were saying, you know, really, his closest comparison is probably Bret Hart, I would say. He's sort of in a weird era of, like there's this turmoil as far as at least as far as TV shows go. And he's clearly, I would say, the best wrestler in the company, in my opinion. I think in-ring wise, I think he's the best.
I'm not sure about that. I still think he has too small of a body of work that I've seen in terms of WWE to even equate himself. Like when Bret won the championship, he had years and years of WWE experience. Forget about anything else. And he had the pedigree as well. So I don't know if Seth is, you know, equal to Bret when they each won the thing. I think Seth still is a number of years behind in terms of gaining that experience. But he can put on a good show.
Yeah, he's certainly one of the three best workers in the company. There's no arguing that. But the problem is, so we compare him to Bret. When Bret was, you know, booked as the wrestling champion, as the, you know, the technical skill champion, the excellence of execution, he was winning matches. It's hard to be booked as the, you know, recognized as, okay, he has the belt because he's our best guy, and not win any matches and also play a cowardly character. There's a lot of stuff to Seth's character, and some of it's interesting, some of it works, some of it doesn't. But I don't know if any of it works for him as the world champion. He shouldn't be afraid of Kane. And the same thing happened to poor Daniel Bryan after he won the title. His first feud, instead of being with Randy Orton, which would have been nice, was with Kane for reasons that still defy explanation. And it was so stupid that, again, he was afraid of Kane. I know Kane is a big guy. I know in the WWE storyline universe, Kane is supposed to still be a threat. He's supposed to always be a threat. But again, we live in the reality era now, and as much as I respect Kane, he's a mid-card act right now. You can't have your world champions being afraid of him. It doesn't make anybody look good. And it's just Seth being afraid of a guy who, again, has not been relevant in the title picture for years is just stupid. It really makes him look like it goes beyond being a cowardly champion. Pardon me. Beyond being a cowardly champion and just someone who, like, why do they even have the belt on him?
Well, I look at it, and I mean, the whole thing that's going on with Kane right now. And I love Kane in terms of his ability, and I like his schizophrenic show that he's putting on now. But the demon Kane, like, is not believable. It just isn't. And the only way I think you can have something like that believable is if he does things that are unexpected. You know, I would love to see Demon Kane chokeslam Stephanie McMahon. Like, if you're going to have a Demon Kane to be afraid of,
took a dark turn.
No. But you need somebody that is unpredictable and can fly off the handle and doesn't care who he damages. Right now, you know, Demon Kane doesn't do that for me.
No, he's really just going after Seth Rollins. So it kills me because the fans, I mean, you can just tell the fans aren't into it. No. They're just not into it. And why should they be? Again, I'm sure they like Kane. We all like Kane. But something just doesn't feel right about this matchup.
Who's going to win the match?
Seth Rollins, hopefully.
I mean, I don't think it's hopefully. I think it's a guarantee. And if he doesn't win the match, if it's all of a sudden it's Kane, like, where is that going? Like, and again, it feels like, now I'll say it, you're going backwards, mm-hmm, rather than forwards.
Mm-hmm. I want to get back to our broader question about the world title. And I brought this up with you guys last week or the last episode. Isn't John Cena essentially the world champion? Isn't the U.S. title superior to the world title? It's defended more. Its champion has beaten the world champion cleanly several times. What's the point?
Cena said it himself, right?
Uh-huh.
It's not the belt that makes the champion. It's the champion that makes the belt.
So they're saying the world title is worthless.
Yeah. I mean, they're saying it indirectly, but yeah.
I think they're saying it pretty directly at this point, actually. I don't think it's indirect anymore.
I still think they think that the fans watching are...
stupid?
I was going to say not smart.
Gullible?
Yeah.
Blind? I look, I'm not a belt fiend, okay? I'm not saying belts need to be revered as anything, but...
Belts, I think, more so now than anything, are... equated to, and here's something for you to think about. What's the difference between Seth Rollins' World Championship belt, Kevin Owens' Intercontinental, and Xavier Woods' trombone?
Nothing.
It's just, it's It's an add-on.
There is a difference. The trombone is more over than the world title right now.
Well, yeah. But it's a prop. That's the word I was looking for. They're all props.
They've always been props. Even dating back to the days of, you want to go back to the glory days of Ric Flair or whatever, go back down to the early 20th century. A belt is a prop. I mean, once they started, you know, ever since the first worked match, the belt became a prop. The belt has always been a prop. But the thing is, when people say prop, props are supposed to be useful. You know what I mean? A prop is useful.
And some are more important than others.
Yeah. So why are you taking a prop that has been so useful for decades and doing nothing with it and just making it pointless? Then it's still a prop. It'll always be a prop, but now it's a useless prop. And I don't understand what they think they're doing with it.
Again, you know, especially since, you know, when they combined both heavyweights, you know, and tried to make it into something that's larger than life, and now what they're doing to it, unless, again, they're doing it on purpose, which I doubt it, but unless they're running the world championship belt, you know, through the ringer, through the toilet, until somebody can win it and
bring it back to its prominence.
I'll just say this right now. Seth Rollins is not the world champion. John Cena is the world champion. He's beaten him several times. It would be like...
Cleanly.
Huh? Cleanly, exactly. If there had been some shenanigans... I guess there was shenanigans on Saturday. I guess you could call that not clean. There was Kane interference, which is just, again, whatever. But John Cena is the world champion, everyone. Don't let anyone tell you different. Seth Rollins is holding a lifeless prop. Let's talk about tonight's NXT TakeOver show.
Oh, yes.
Now, I don't watch TakeOver all the time, but of course we keep up with it. We're fans of a lot of the talents. A 30-minute Iron Woman match, the first time the WWE has done a match like this in their entire history. Pop, you excited?
You know what's happening tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow, no.
Tomorrow, we are recording on a Wednesday, just to let people know. Tomorrow is Thursday, October the 8th, I believe, and the Toronto Blue Jays are playing their very first baseball playoff game.
I was going to ask, Blue Jays, is that a... I thought that was a minor league hockey team. Is that the Maple Leafs affiliate?
Very first playoff game in 22 or 23 years. And I feel the same way about that game as I do about the match tonight.
Wow.
And it's not excited, although I am.
Aroused.
I feel more nervous. I'm scared. And I think it's because, you know, I follow the Blue Jays for so much. I was so impressed with Bailey and Banks on their last match that I am desperately, want to get their phone numbers. No, I am desperately wishing for such a good match from them to match what they did last time. And I'm worried that they're not going to hit it.
They should have given them an hour.
And tomorrow, I'm worried that, you know, with all the positive energy that's going to Blue Jays, I'm worried that they're going to fall flat.
No. I don't live in worry, because for me, the journey is what makes me happy about things. So for me, it's always just seeing these people get to this point is always incredible. Like, just the fact that we're even talking about such high anticipation for Bailey and Sasha Banks and for our Blue Jays is, that for me is already rewarding. Yes, I'm going to feel bad if, let's say, Bailey and Sasha Banks somehow don't live up to their last encounter. Yeah, I'm going to feel bad if the Jays get swept out of the first round of the playoffs, something like that, you know? But at the same time, I won't feel anywhere near as bad as if I didn't have these expectations. We lived in a universe where I didn't have expectations for Bailey and Sasha Banks, or where the Jays didn't make the playoffs. Because, trust me, I lived in that world for the last 22 years. I'll take the feeling of, like, an embarrassing sweep over that any freaking day.
And maybe clarify it a little bit. You know, everybody is due to have a bad game. Everybody's due to have a bad match. I mean, that can happen, and hopefully it doesn't happen to either one of them. What I worry about more than anyone else, or more than anything else, is people going, you see, those women, they didn't deserve it.
I don't think anyone's going to say that. They're saying that.
No, I think there's people out there that are hoping and waiting for them to say it.
I think they're already saying that every week when they watch Raw. So I think that's already, that ship is in the heart, has been sailing for a while.
But that last match with Bailey and Sasha, they couldn't.
No.
They couldn't say that. And then they'll say something like, well, they got lucky. And that's what worries me. Because they both, and I agree with you, regardless of what happens in that match, and I will swear here, they both effing earned the right to be the main event, period.
Yeah, they should have been the main event of Brooklyn.
Yeah, they should have, but they earned this. And so whatever happens with it, happens. And I just, and that's why I worry, because, you know, I don't want people to come back and say, hey, you know what? See, I told you they couldn't carry it, because they deserve the opportunity. Just like the Blue Jays, they deserve to be in the playoffs. They played extremely well. You know, hopefully they go on to win. I just, yeah, that's.
I don't think anyone. I don't think anyone reasonably would
I'm
say
that. I'm a father.
That.
I worry about everything.
No, I know. Really, again, like I said, more people. Here's the sad thing to keep in mind: more people probably watch Total Divas and the weekly shenanigans of the Raw Divas division than they did that first Sasha Banks Bayley match. That's really what bothers me, is that they'll have another great match and it just won't mean anything in the grand scheme of things. It's still, because somehow it, after the Bayley Sasha Banks match, it looked like, it's like the Raw Divas division got even worse. I don't know how that even makes sense, but I know it's two separate creative teams, things like that. But
are you reliving the conversation we had Monday night
about
me, my explanation as to why that six women divas tag match was so bad?
Please say it again for my sake and the audience.
Was so that it would make the NXT match on Wednesday look even better.
Boy, that six-person Divas match on Raw was people, I love women's wrestling. If I see the same six, and hey, SmackDown spoilers, guess what? It's another six-woman tag match. Go out on Thursday or Friday night, whatever, and go out and do something, please.
And we say this, SmackDown. And yet we both agree that hands down, by far, the best women's wrestler out there today, Sasha Banks, is an absolute joy to watch in and out of the ring.
Yes.
And yet she was part of that six woman tag team match, and yet we can still,
well, she was only the hot tag. She was essentially Roman Reigns with a shield in that match, which is fine, but it's a waste of her talents. I mean, that means for 2 minutes of exciting Sasha Banks action, I had to sit through 10 minutes of whatever nonsense. Back to the positives.
And there's the thing is, there's just so many good women wrestlers out there, including Paige.
Including all, you know, many of the women they have employed
Charlotte
already.
Charlotte and Becky Lynch and Candice LeRae and Courtney Rush. I mean, and look, Casey. Look, there's so many.
Even Alicia Fox, like, I was going to say Naomi, but I can't stand her. Even, you know, Nikki Bella has improved, people say. But when you don't give them any storyline and you just give them the same matchups every week, they can't succeed in that environment. So I'm not just criticizing the divas that are existing. I'm still just saying the way they're used. Nikki Bella, Alicia Fox, you know, girls who I'm not a fan of, but who I think are at least decent wrestlers. There's things you can do with them. They're just not doing it. Let's dwell on the positives as we go out. Some of the other things happening, the ending of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. Some of the names still involved, Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, Scott Dawson, Dash Wilder, The Mechanics. Jason Jordan and Chad Gable, two young guys who the WWE just loves, and Rhino and Baron Corbin. If this were Raw, I would say the obvious final is Finn Balor, Samoa Joe versus Rhino, Baron Corbin. But that's the crazy thing about NXT is they, you know, I didn't think Blake and Murphy for me kind of came out of nowhere, and I think they were great as long as they held the belts.
Agreed.
So that's very interesting. Obviously, whoever wins that is probably getting a feud with the Vaudevillains. So very organic, natural booking there. And then we have Cruz facing Tyler Breeze, and I actually hope Tyler Breeze wins. I fear that Tyler Breeze is becoming that guy that they use to get all these
new people over,
which is somewhat understandable. Breeze is such a great talent, though I will say he does not have the physique that WWE is looking for.
No, he doesn't. But if you want to keep him to be that person, you know, that you know, line that people have to, you know, be able to cross to make it, you still got to throw him a few wins here and there.
Yeah, it's interesting because his character is so refined and something that a lot of the NXT guys need, you know, even the most talented guys, they don't have a character yet. Look, I mean, we've been talking a lot about Ty Dillinger, and he finally found a character. So Tyler Breeze has had that for a while now, and I wish they would just call him up to the main roster. Even if it's he becomes like the next Fandango or something. I just want to see him, let them dip his toes in the water. And the other exciting thing, Asuka debuting against Dana Brooke. Dana Brooke, who I like, though I admit she's a terrible wrestler, but I just like her for some reason. I wish Sasha Banks and Bayley would 60 minutes. I can't get enough of
them. This is what, it's a two-hour show, right?
What, this podcast is going to be if we don't wrap up soon.
No, the NXT.
I would assume so, yeah. By the way, there's also, I believe, a Smash Wrestling show Yeah, sorry. Friday, October 16th. Something different. Check it out. Get your tickets. Support independent wrestling. Always, always, always. And purchase the WWE Network, I guess, if you want to see more quality shows like live from MSG.
Yes, because we're not going to tell you to do anything illegal because we're so far above that.
No. NXT TakeOver Respect tonight or whenever you listen to it. You probably have already seen it. But make sure you watch that show if you get a chance. That's it. Pop on out. Take care, everyone. Every scar will build my throne.